Welcome to Entering Storybrooke, a Once Upon a Time podcast,
where we rewatch and analyze the ABC show. Before we begin, our podcast artwork was designed by Nickel Anarchy.
And our theme song was created by Taylor Paisley French.
Be aware, this podcast contains spoilers for the Once Upon a Time series.
Carter.
Erica. And we have a special guest today.
It's Tawny.
Woohoo! Today, we are looking at Season 2, Episode 5, The Doctor, which premiered on October 28th, 2012. It was directed by Paul Edwards, written by Kitzis and Horowitz, and the cinematography, which we will be talking about, was by Steven Jackson, who I believe does like the vast majority of the episodes of Once Upon a Time, but shout out to him. He was the cinematographer for Cabin in the Woods and the DP of many episodes of Riverdale and The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Very relevant. They're in charge of the camera. That's the, yeah, the cinematographer is, the DP and cinematographer sometimes is used like interchangeably, but they're the people who are setting up the shot and determining what you are seeing, where the camera is sitting in the space, in the scene, in the forest, and what the framing of the picture looks like.
And DP here stands for
DP stands for director of photography. Does seem like it's time for our 60-second synopsis, and I kind of want to make Tawny do it. I feel like we could do a Wheel of Doom, but we could also just make Tawny do it.
60 seconds is so fast, and I wrote my breakdown in three separate paragraphs of timelines.
Well, Tawny, sometimes we don't always get what we want. All magic comes with a price, you know? Okay, are you ready?
I can try really hard.
Carter, are you timing?
Yes, I'm timing.
Okay. Okay, ready, set, go.
All right, so Regina's trying to not use magic, and that's the whole episode, basically. She tries to not use magic, and then Whale really wants her to help him go back to his own land so he can help his brother bring him back from the dead. So he decides to resurrect her love, Daniel, using one of her magic hearts from her vault. And it doesn't really work very well, and Daniel goes after Henry and David, and then Regina, and she is forced to use magic to freeze him and then make him go away forever, and it's very sad. Meanwhile, we learn that Dr. Whale is actually Dr. Frankenstein, and he came into her life in a flashback. And meanwhile, as well, in the Enchanted Forest present day, Emma and Snow find Hook, and he's going to help them find
ding, 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 ding. That was good, Tawny. I think you really hit like the main themes. I think you identified like, yeah,
that was the
main
scariest structure of the episode. 60 seconds of my life, so thank you.
That was very interesting framing. I like the moment that you started and you were like, this episode is about Regina trying not to use magic. I was like, oh, I guess it is.
It really is. No, that Tawny was completely right. That was a character study on Tawny interpreting the episode from Regina's character arc's POV.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was a fun one. Wow. So with that, Darian just dropped that truth bomb on us and went to go fix their Wi-Fi. So is that like a Mary Shelley story thing?
Let's Google.
We're Googling. For frame of reference, we all just watched this episode and we're like, oh my God, we do not know enough lore about the original Mary Shelley Frankenstein. So we just did like a frantic 20 minutes of Googling, all of us, to find more information about it.
Darian probably knows a bunch.
I really must assume Darian has a lot of facts because Darian has a lot of facts in her brain.
I do think it is from Mary Shelley. Wait,
what are we saying is from Mary Shelley?
Victor Frankenstein was a college dropout, so he doesn't technically have a degree, so he's not technically Dr. Frankenstein.
Copy.
Okay. Should we just talk about overall impressions of the episode?
Yeah, let's do some highlights, and we'll dive more into talking about Frankenstein momentarily. So Tawny thinks this episode is about Regina trying not to use magic and failing, but really put her in an impossible situation in which she had to use magic in order to protect everybody.
I think it's more so about like magic as like like a symbol of like power in her life, and how to like not use power to hurt other people and use it for good. And so like the whole flashback is like more so about how Rumple is trying to get her to learn to take a heart and crush it, which is just like a very like random deed of evil, like just do it for fun, and she can't do it because she won't wield power like that. But then when the doctor can't do it, can't bring Daniel back, and she's hopeless, she can do it, and she's like, okay. And then she rips out a heart and becomes evil, and that's the best part of the episode in my opinion.
When she walks back in with the leather and the updo, ready yes. to do some murder.
Yes.
That was such a fun look. The one time she has leather in the Enchanted Forest.
She literally was like, I can't just go and like, he needs to know. Like my teacher needs to know that I mean business and I'm here for evil. So I better spend 45 minutes getting ready before I go to meet him.
Absolutely.
This is also where their relationship, if I am not mistaken, starts to turn down a intimate route.
That's not canon.
Yes, it is.
With her? No.
Rumple and Regina?
That was cool.
What?
No way. They never kiss. You're lying to me.
I think they kiss, but like, I don't, like Rumple and Cora were like, together. I don't think Regina and Rumple ever, I feel like the whole gag with them was that it was always like a sexual tension that was not really satisfied or discussed or named in a, you know, satisfying way.
Well, regardless, this is where the tension starts. When she shows up in leather, ready to murder.
That's true. He's wearing leather in the same scene.
Leather equals murder. Shout out to veganism. Tawny, you brought up her having these flashbacks of the magic lessons. And I feel like this is one of those episodes where the flashbacks to the storybook, the flashbacks to the Enchanted Forest work really well structurally because this episode is mostly following Regina. She is our main character for the episode. The flashbacks occur specifically as though we are following her stream of consciousness. So when we're in Storybrooke, when we go back to the Enchanted Forest in the past, it's specifically because Dr. Hopper says it's much harder to stop using magic than it is to start learning how to use magic. And so immediately we cut to the Enchanted Forest and her first magic lesson. When she finds Whale in his own blood and Whale confesses that he tried to bring Diana back to life, she is then immediately brought back to the scene in the Enchanted Forest where Victor is bringing Daniel back to life for the first time. So it's just easier to follow than sometimes when we have these episodes and there's cuts back to the past and the present versions of the Enchanted Forest, and we're like, what is going on? These are also separate. It is harder to follow. But this one was like so succinct and compact.
Certainly those two storylines are very well edited together, artfully so, and complement each other really well because they are like about the same thing. They're an explanation for what is going on, which is like what the show classically was doing. It's just that this season that relationship gets a little dicier, especially because in this episode there is a third storyline, as there is in all the episodes at the beginning of season two. And wow, that third storyline really is just completely orthogonal to everything else that's happening in this episode.
Can you explain what the word orthogonal means, like the way I had to explain cinematography?
Orthogonal means it's at a right angle, which is to say that they are moving in completely different directions. You know, these two plot lines do not, they will not meet. And they are, not related to each other. There's not really, I feel like, a meaningful correlation or connection between them other than like mechanically. Sometimes when we cut, we are going to a storyline about Emma interrogating Hook and not trusting him and knowing that they're walking into a trap, but it's a trap that they understand. Like, all of those things are fine and well and good for the most part, although Hook is, like, not giving in this episode, but...
I liked him.
It's okay. Of course you did, Tawny. Of course you did. Wait, what were we bullying you for the last time you were here?
I don't know. Something else to do with a sad man with eyeliner. Maybe it was also Hook. But I feel like he didn't exist before.
No, he wasn't here yet. Was it Whale?
No. You know what? Maybe it was... It was Pinocchio.
Oh, no.
So wait. Much worse. Unforgivable. We're going to have to rehash that whole thing.
Wow, that's very unfortunate. But, you know, we live, we learn, we grow, nobody's perfect, et cetera, et cetera.
But what I wanted to say, in terms of the two things being orthogonal, is that the word you used, Carter?
Yeah.
Yeah, is that I feel like the parts where they do meet is in, like, people using deception to get somewhere. Everyone's trying to get somewhere or another, get you to a different world or somewhere that is not where they are right now. Or they want to get back, or they need to get this thing and then take it back. And so, like,
isn't that the whole show for 7 seasons, though?
Yes, it certainly is. but that's, I guess, where they like. I'm like, okay, so like, Korra is the like, is like the unseen like echo of Regina in that like storyline in the Enchanted Forest.
I love the unseen echo.
I mostly, okay, to go back to the original frame, my frame of this episode was different, which is why I remarked on it. Like, I really saw this episode as being fundamentally about the ways in which evil is manufactured and men are the engineers of that which is evil. In so many ways, in the sense that they like literally create the behavior through social engineering, and also they are the ones who create the categories to also post hoc determine what things are forgivable and what things are not. And that is, I feel like, the through line of what Regina is going through across the two storylines in this episode is like, which is like part of the struggling not to use magic thing, I guess. In the sense that, like, in Storybrooke, she's given this impossible task where she's trying to be a good person now. And for her, being a good person is equated with her not using her power. And when she has to use her power to do something that is useful and really hard for her and, like, emotionally damaging, she's made to feel bad about that, not just because, you know, like, she had to let go of this remnant of her ex-fiancé, but because she did so in a way that was, you know, using a special power that other people don't have and that she's not supposed to be using for some reason, because people associate her use of that power with her treating her son poorly. Whereas in the Enchanted Forest, like, I think that we have a similar, or we have like a more direct version of the story where, like, literally we see the three men all collaborating and lying to make Regina a miserable person and take away her hopes and her dreams. And literally when I saw that, I was like, wow, that's excellent. That is what, unfortunately, I really enjoy seeing in television.
I was gonna ask, did you think about that frame before or after we Googled the original circumstances surrounding Mary Shelley's life? Looks like it was before. No, you say more.
I don't think my sister texted me back. I was supposed to be quoting her fucking 11th grade junior English honors essay for one Dr. Holly Greenwell.
Shout out to you, Holly Greenwell. We love you. You taught me all about magical realism. I love you so much.
But it turns out, like, Mary Shelley's life experiences and Frankenstein were indeed about her trying to carve out a space for herself as, you know, a woman with thoughts and ideas amidst a bunch of men who were very famous and very opinionated and did not treat her very well or respect her very much. And a lot of ways, apparently, the writing of the Frankenstein novel is about that. It's her processing her negative emotions about these men into the character of Victor Frankenstein and writing a story that clarifies why, like, the specific ways in which he is harmful.
Can we, while we're on this historical tangent about Mary Shelley as a person, really, like, sit with the fact that the first science fiction novel, as far as we tend to decide, as far as, like, we determine it in, like, the Western English-speaking canon, was written by a woman, specifically writing about a male evil monstrosity who creates another monstrosity? That is so powerful.
And it's not techno-apologist either. Like, the roots of the... It's not techno-apologist either. The roots of the genre really are in thoughtful skepticism and, you know, philosophical critique. I mean, like, there were so many wild notes about Mary Shelley's life. She was good friends with Lord Byron, the famous, apparently, according to bisexual.org, bisexual person.
But I wanted to add something real quick to what Carter was just saying about men being evil and like making Regina into this thing. And I had that exact feeling when Daniel turns around and is like gonna strangle her because he is just this like man thing that only knows like violent man thing to do. He's not a person. And he like lunges toward her and all she has is her power to protect herself.
Yeah.
I was like, damn. Like, she doesn't want to use her magic, but in the moment she needs it most when, like, this man thing is trying to kill her, it's all she has.
Literally, yes. Yeah. She found a way for herself in a world that is dominated by, you know, brute force, physical shows of strength. She found a weapon to defend herself, to, you know, accomplish things that everyone else is able to accomplish. Like, it's not like... The Charmings have money and they have
weapons. She was also the queen of the kingdom, so she did also have money.
Well, but she got that.
True. She wasn't born
of
with it.
Magic.
Snow was, of course, born privileged. Charming, not so much.
Well, Charming got where he was because he was physically capable of like doing tasks that involved physical strength that other people could not do. Like, I don't know. I just feel like it emphasizes this point that like, you know, the episode is really visualizing strikingly the idea that evil is constructed across several different axes. Yes.
And also that there are many different frames that we can think about magic and Regina's use of magic. Partially, like we said, it is this thing that people are associating with her evilness and her inability to be a mother that other people are claiming if she uses her magic, she cannot be a good mother because it is an evil thing. But it is also her power. Like you said, Tawny, it's her way of defending herself and feeling strength and protecting herself in this world. So it is where her power comes from. But also it is treated in this episode like a drug. She goes to see Dr. Hopper because she needs help staying off the magic. And she comes back to see Dr. Hopper after she has to murder David again. Daniel. After she has to murder Daniel again in tears because she says, I used magic. Literally, like, I relapsed. I used.
Yeah.
Those words are very, you know, not vague about the way in which we're framing her use of magic in this episode. So it's hard for her. She's truly, like, she's trying to kick an addiction, but... This episode also asks us to question, should she have to? Is she ever going to be able to?
And also, like, live a safe life? Is it as simple as that? Like, it's
definitely
not one thing, just bad. Like, clearly, it can serve some good, too.
And clearly, who made the magic bad for her? Because she wasn't doing dark magic. She says in this episode, I don't do dark magic. Rumpelstiltskin's plans all along to get her to transport him to a world without magic so he can find Bay are what pushed him to teach her how to be a killer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So even if her mom had never taught her, I don't know, or maybe even if Rumpel had never taught her, maybe her mom would have. But either way, she was not the one who started herself on this dark path. It was Rumpel. Oof. Men.
Everyone's relatedly just using her.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is using her. Everyone is instrumentalizing her. And this episode also engages in a discourse about how we understand the parameters of magic on a different axis, an axis that I would say is less successful.
Oh, yeah.
And less interesting. But the whole point of having Frankenstein here, I mean, among, I guess, other reasons to give us this really emotional scene with Daniel where she has to kill him and no one else knows how to act in the scene except for her, but she is really acting her ass off. The other reason why we have all this is to give us a discourse about magic and science between Rumpel and like Regina, kind of, especially in the storybook side of the story. And on the other end, Dr. Whale, who is Frankenstein and is constantly talking about how what he's doing is not magic, it's science. Literally, the writers of this episode are so interested in trying to make this a thing and really beating it over the head and having so many dialogues about this that are just people standing around, and they're like nice shots as it's happening. The Enchanted Forest scene where they're having this argument is really nice and well framed.
What's the man's name? Steven Jackson. Shout out to you, Steven Jackson.
Yeah, when they're looking up at like Rumple and Sebastian Stan next to each other, and they're like have this really nice like framing where like Sebastian Stan is seated with a hat on and close to the guy. Anyway, it's like they're well shot, but like fundamentally what's happening is just like men standing around talking about what is magic and what is science and what is better. But they don't, no one is defining terms anywhere. It's really, really unsatisfying. It's just science because that is the name that he has for it, and because he wears a lab coat, and because he didn't even go to med school but knows people who did go to med school and is from a world where there is such a thing as medical school.
Is that a lab coat, or is that like a super sexy black like double-breasted high neck turtleneck like knee length skirt situation? It is not giving lab coat, it's giving fierce.
It's like a steampunk.
100 yes, it's, steampunk. I was saying it's giving the Matrix. He's in the Matrix.
Rest in peace, Mary Shelley.
He has sunglasses to
you
prove it.
You would have loved steampunk. Yes.
Oh my God, she would have loved steampunk. Wow.
Mary Shelley, our close personal friend. Yeah, we did spend like pretty much the entire time we were watching this episode arguing about whether or not the world that Victor Frankenstein comes from has magic, or if it's like a form of magic that they just call science, or what, because they wouldn't have been able to use Jefferson's hat to get there if it was a world without magic. But also if we use that principle that they state in this episode, that the hat only takes you to worlds with magic, then I don't know if anything would make sense from the first season.
No, like they literally restate it. Rumple says in this episode, in a conversation with Jefferson, like, your hat is not that useful to me because I'm trying to get to a land without magic and your hat only goes between them. They restate it for us in this episode. And then we go to this land. Darren refers to it as the land without color, where Frankenstein is. And literally does not have any color except for the magical heart that he brings back with him at the end of the episode. But like, I guess we're supposed to assume based on that these preconditions that it does have magic, but he just chooses not to use it, A, and B, that the magic is just weaker, or like he can't get a magical heart in his world, which is the reason why he goes through this whole ordeal where he pretends to try to bring Daniel back from the dead in the Enchanted Forest. It's also that he can actually use the heart that she found for that ceremony to, you know, for his own purposes in his own world. I don't know. It feels like a plot hole to me, to be honest.
So the land without color, when you were joking about this realm is just the realm of early 20th century films, you were actually correct. It's literally just the land of black and white movies. That's funny.
And I guess there is
magic.
Which
are magic.
So true, Tawny. Okay, what else is there to talk about in this episode? Charming slash grandpa David is teaching Henry how to ride horses, which is sweet. We think that I was like, wow, this is actually a moment of David like being nurturing and responsible and teaching Henry about responsibilities. But then he just leaves him alone in the stables.
I know. I was like, oh my God, he's unsupervised. What?
Horses are dangerous. You could get kicked in the face. And he does. He does get kicked in the face. And worse.
I'm going to Darian insert here. Quote, amazingly, in a whale-heavy episode, David manages to be the worst character in every scene. The fact that Regina doesn't kill him when he shoved her shows a great deal of restraint on her part. Period. That is absolutely correct. The big... David has like two scenes in this episode, I would say, right? There's one in the beginning where he is not giving Henry instructions about how to be around a large mammal that can kick the shit out of things. But, you know, because, you know, like whatever, that's how he grew up or something. And therefore it's him being a good guardian of some kind. And then the second episode is with Regina when they're trying to figure out what to do about Daniel, who is at this point a violent zombie who is not responding to anything that anyone says. David is getting out a gun, and we see Regina acting for her life in this scene. She is despondent. She is looking in different directions. She's trying to physically fight him because, again, she's trying not to use magic, and David is just physically, yeah, like overpowering her and trying to shove her to the side so that he can shoot her boyfriend. Like,
this scene actually nearly brought tears to my eyes. Regina saying, don't kill him, please. Like, I'll talk to him. Let me talk to him. Let me talk to my fiance. Oh
Because literally in that moment, she is back. We could have cut to another scene there that is a flashback of her, like, you know, dead wife montage, slow motion riding through the fields with Daniel. Because in that moment, she is back, a young girl engaged to this man. Oh, God, it's so heartbreaking.
This seems like a good moment for a Darian insert.
Also, in case anyone is wondering where Darian went, her computer was having some issues, so she had to log off. But we are going to be continuing to finish reading her notes for the rest of the episode.
From Darian again, the theme of this episode is Regina must let go of the past. They go real heavy by forcing her to kill her first lost love, the part of her past she's refused to let go of. That's fine. Fairy tales can be heavy-handed. But the way that scene plays out is just so poorly done. When Daniel first showed up in the stables, I was like, oh snap, Regina is going to have to use magic to save Henry and send Daniel back to the grave. Both choosing the future she wants over the past that haunts her and showing that her magic can be used for good and that it is part of the better future. But no, that's not what happened. Instead, we got the scene that we got.
That is smart, because that would have just made it, if instead of David saving Henry and telling Henry to run out, if Regina had to use magic to save Henry, that would have been very emotional, because then Henry would have seen her have to also kill Daniel in front of him.
And Henry would have to, we would probably watch Henry working through this, where he still would probably believe in all of these preconceptions he has about her magic and what it means and how he should understand it, but also see the contradictions in that like magic is a force of violence and destruction in a lot of ways, but that violence and destruction are not necessarily things that have absolute moral connotations to them in the way that he has applied the moral connotations in the past. Yeah, I think that it's just weird. Like, it feels like such a small thing that David is the one who gets Henry out, but it's weird. Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
It would have also forced Henry to see a different side of his mom and be like, wow, this was a man you loved, like truly loved, and have had to see her interact with the love of her life.
That is, I think, high key, one of the big differences throughout the series between Henry's relationship with Emma and his relationship with Regina, is that Regina as a parental figure is not someone, like, he thinks of her past, but he never thinks about her as a young person who had sadnesses and ambitions and emotional vulnerabilities and all of these things. And the way that he seems to really acutely feel these things about Emma, he's like, his mental image of Emma is someone who has this great tragic loss that he can understand as someone who also was adopted, right? But like with Regina, I don't think we've ever seen him have that same like equivalent reckoning of being like, Regina also lost an opportunity at having a family and at having a quote unquote normal life. And I can identify with where she was in that moment and the choices she made in order to try to get back to that place or recreate that opportunity in her life.
And that's because Regina is his mom.
I was going to say, when we were Henry's age,
our parents are real people.
Yeah, like when you were Henry's age, it weren't like, yeah, my parents had a tragic childhood, that's why they are the way they are. No, it was like, that's an evil queen. That's as simple as it gets. It's a lot easier to meet someone brand new and see their full self.
Because even if you know that about your parents, even if we know these objective facts, like, oh, this and this happened to my mom during childhood, or like this and this, it is impossible to reckon that with the woman who stands before you, who exists to serve you and feed you and clothe you and bathe you and assume that she has a future and like want good things for her future, you know, that aren't selfishly connected to your own needs. Henry is not thinking about his mom dating again in the way that he's thinking about Emma dating again and finding love, because Emma's his cool aunt, essentially, and Regina is his mom. Those are kind of all of my thoughts on the episode, honestly.
I mean, I think those are the main points. Should we circle back to Emma and Hook?
That's so true. A moment of recognition for the start of their story, because this is where they meet for the first time.
I was kind of unmoved, to be honest.
I liked the part where she ties him up to a tree.
I liked the part where she put her sword against his throat.
Her, like, dagger thing. Because she doesn't have a gun in the Enchanted Forest.
There are some cool moments where she, exerts power over him. And not just physical power, but also she is able to understand when he's lying in a way that no one else does because it's her superpower, but also in a way that makes their interactions within the context of this larger group still feel really intimate. Because it, fundamentally, even though like Snow is there and Aurora and Mulan, like fundamentally we're looking at, you know, a like mental conflict between Snow and Hook, in which she threatens to basically, you know, leave him to be eaten by trolls, right? Ogres? To be eaten by ogres tied up against a tree. That was fun. And in terms of the actual like dialogue between the two of them and the glances, I don't know. I feel like something about the way that the performance of Hook is being given in this episode is not really working for me, and like at a slightly higher level than it normally is, kind of only moderately working for me. But I think there are other perspectives on that.
I just think that Hook is the bottomest bottom to ever bottom.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That really came out to me in this episode. I was like, I see you.
And he needs his eyeliner.
Yeah, he is like sans the thick eyeliner in this episode. It's really throwing us off. Where's the charcoal?
Is there anything else to say? I feel like there were other things that happened, but I'm really...
Was there?
Oh, something that we... A little nugget of like information we get in the Enchanted Forest with Hook and Emma is that like he wants them to... He wants to help them... he wants to like turn his back on Korra and go with them instead, because he wants to go to Storybrooke and get revenge on somebody who took his hand. And that's like a nice little
wait, I think he names that
Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh, he does say Rumpelstiltskin. Thank you. I forgot. He says Rumpelstiltskin. And so we're about to meet the crocodile, which is fun.
Yeah, I'm so excited about that. There is also a beanstalk. So I guess we're going to meet some giants as well. We're probably going to see Emma's biceps rippling in the wind as she climbs up the beanstalk.
We do kind of meet Jack in a way.
And on this note, we should say everybody stream the Grammy Award nominated album of Into the Woods starring our dear friend and star truly for the ages, Cole Thompson. Stream Into the Woods starring Cole Thompson, woo! Everybody.
Do it, do it.
Make sure that he wins a Grammy, please.
I guess there are like a few other assorted moments that we could like touch on briefly. There's a moment that feels in the way that it is placed in the ordering of the episode, like it's supposed to be very resonant and important. There's like a follow-up discussion between Whale and Rumple where Whale got his arm ripped off by pseudo Daniel, the zombie that he recreated in Storybrooke as a way of trying to get Regina to take him back to his land. And because his arm gets ripped off, he has to go to Rumpelstiltskin to ask to get it put back on. And we have this tense discussion, which again, really like verbally, no one is saying anything. Like every time they try to draw this distinction, no one is... It is a distinction without difference. No one is giving us, oh, like magic is something that is a faith-based system. Magic is not experimental. Like none of that. What we are getting is just them saying different names. But basically what we are seeing is Rumpel having an exercise of power, but in a coy businessman way. And that part of it, very effective. The amount of nose scrunches in this 2-minute scene.
Say it. Say it. He says like twice. He's like, say it.
The only payment he extracts for this magical reattachment of an arm that Whale does not trust surgeons to do is that Whale has to say that he needs magic. And that, wow. Again, thematically, don't care. But
if you want it, you have to ask for it. That's what Rumple said.
Rumple is
the top. Is the top. To ever top. Rumple and Hook, there's got to be some fanfic out there. Where is Fran?
Absolutely.
This is where Fran would be like, oh, yes, actually, I'm not going to do the British accent. There, I read this one fanfic. It was like 30 pages long back in 2016, and it had these details about Hook and Rumpelstiltskin, and it's actually really great, and you should all read it. We'll actually get Fran to give us a link or something.
On the topic of accents, we should also drop in really briefly that Whale has a mysterious shifting accent in the Enchanted Forest that is mostly British, but with little hints of something else. And in Storybrooke, he just has a standard, maybe Midwestern American accent.
I think quote unquote British accent with a little hint of something else is just quote unquote a bad British accent.
There were some moments where it's like, is he trying to do German? Because as we found out via Google about an hour ago, Victor Frankenstein is supposed to be Swiss, German, Italian, and also written by an English lady. So
maybe it was really like Callahan Skogman in Shadow and Bone. It was truly a genius interpretation of the text, pulling on multiple accent sources.
Ethnography,
maybe. Yes.
One other quick moment to shout out about, again, highlighting the way that David is somehow miraculously the worst character in so many scenes in this episode, is that he is in one other scene that I forgot, in which he punches Dr. Whale walking down the street for having sex. We're having like consensual sex with Mary Margaret when no one knew who they were. Wild. Like, I don't understand who, I mean,
also, Whale reads him for filth because David goes, "You slept with my wife?" And he goes, "Catherine?" Because David is still married to Catherine. Sure, Charming is married to Snow, but David was married to Catherine. Messy.
Not even attempting to read him for filth either. It was like a genuine question, I think. Like, Whale, like, you get the sense that Whale, like, you know, he is someone who has a lot of sex. And he, like, literally did not know what David was referring to. He seemed genuinely confused in that scene. But also, that was a read. Absolutely. Destructive. One hit KO.
Knockout. I think that per entering Storybrooke rules, we now need to choose a character who we all disliked this episode. Who are we voting off the island?
Are we not going to do the good ones?
Oh, just kidding. Per entering Storybrooke rules, we need to choose a character that we are the most invested in from this episode. Tana, you go first.
Regina.
Yes. In what outfit?
I really love the like brown, stable girl, like I'm youthful and kind of look like Snow vibes. I love that outfit.
Yes, with the gloves and the braid.
She did actually really serve use in that outfit, particularly in the scene where she and Jefferson are standing next to each other outside the surgical tent and watching Victor Frankenstein try to do his procedure. She looks young as fuck. And like, she actually needs someone to console her because she is a child watching someone do something very risky and dangerous to maybe revive her ex-boyfriend. And maybe she doesn't know how she feels about that. Like that scene, she's really, because of the outfit, but also because of the performance.
Also her acting, she's giving big doughy eyes. Yeah. What about you, Carter?
Also is the flowy top, though. The flowy top helps, like, say, like, youth, and then she puts on the, like, tight leather and is, like, not youth anymore.
The low braid versus the giant bump it also make a big difference.
Very true.
The, like, middle-parted low braid as opposed to the bump it updo we get with the leather ensemble. Carter, who are you invested in?
I think Regina is, like, almost too obvious an answer because this is, like, her episode in every way. I'm going to give a side shout out to Sebastian Stan.
That's what I was going to say. I was literally going to say, Regina is too obvious. I'm going to have to go for Sebastian Stan because I think this is my favorite episode of him. This is like pre his trauma, like before his whole daughter situation. Mm-hmm. This is him being like a cool guy who hops realms and like does deals with Rumpelstiltskin. Like, we haven't really seen Rumpel have a lot of like contemporaries.
Yes. People he respects and people who he needs things from in a way where he's willing to like just level with them and be like, this is what I want. You can give it to me. And I know I have things that you want. And like, we are just going to have to approach each other as contemporaries and have a conversation about it.
I feel like Rumpel and Sebastian Stan kissed, but like in a, like a, we should just, this is
should
like,
we?
Should we? We should like see what it's like, right? We're both powerful, smart guys who should kiss.
Yeah, we were, I think that's right. We were before this recording having a fun time reading on bi.org about famous historical bisexual people, one of whom was Lord Byron, good friend of Mary Shelley, which is the reason why we got all of this. Like, Lord Byron is exactly, I feel like his like the way that he did sex and relationships and sexuality is probably like roughly consistent with what Rumpel did, right? Like, maybe Rumpel is not as like promiscuous, but like I think had similar like broad ideas of just being like, I mean, like, we're like two powerful people hanging out.
Famously, Lord Byron traveled with his quote unquote doctor, and they were quote unquote friends and quote unquote traveling companions. His doctor also famously wrote The Vampire, that's spelt with a Y, off of the same night of storytelling that Mary Shelley was first inspired to write the Frankenstein novel. So that's some fascinating history.
Also, the doctor was described as being like young and hot at the time that they were all doing this. So we all know how that goes.
I feel like on one hand, I'm like, should we not like stomp around actual history and be like, this person was gay, this person was gay? And I'm like, no, we actually have to do that because nobody taught us those things. They actively untaught us those things. So when we see something in history that is a little bit suspicious, we literally must claim those people.
I mean, I feel like the caveat that goes along with that is that modern identity labels and categories are modern identity labels and categories. These things are socially contingent. There's really no way of knowing like what people would do given the modern understandings and categories that we have. But we do know what they did. And what they did were things that we would look at now and be like, that was pretty gay. And let's celebrate that. Hey.
Yeah. Celebration.
Least favorite characters.
Tanya, you go.
I really don't like Whale, but I feel like I have just a weird taste in my mouth about that man because of the Vampire Diaries.
Tanya, do you want to give some background information for our listeners about the Vampire Diaries and maybe your relationship to the Vampire Diaries?
Sure. Well, I believe it is why I am the way I am, and I apologize. And that's all I have to say.
What do vampires represent to you? Because vampires have represented so many things throughout their history. Shout out to John Kachuba and the Shapeshifters book I just finished. What do vampires mean to you, Tani?
I feel like in terms of like the current representation, at least the representation that like we grew up with, like True Blood, Vampire Diaries, Twilight, it's like a tortured soul that for some reason, even though they've been alive for hundreds of years, just have free reign to live as teenagers forever and just like keep fucking children. That is kind of what I think vampires are in the current iteration.
Could you say that in a way that is a little bit more like we could put that on the internet?
Sure, I forgot. Or like,
imagine
there
are 10-year-olds listening to this.
10-year-olds. Okay. I would say that vampires in the current iteration that we grew up with, like True Blood, Vampire Diaries, Twilight, they are tortured souls that do really bad things. And for some reason, we forgive them because they're perpetually young looking.
And usually
and
rich
very
and hot.
Strange. Yes, always rich, always hot. Especially if they're a CW vampire, they are hot. And 30, but they're playing 17-year-olds.
Literally, there's layers to it, yeah.
It's like they put the image in your tiny 13-year-old psyche that there is a 30-year-old looking 17-year-old in your high school who is more tortured
than actually been
than
alive
you.
For hundreds of years.
Yes, who is more tortured than you because they've secretly been alive for hundreds of years going through horrible traumas, and somehow your love is the one thing that makes them want to go on living eternities.
It's very true, Tani. Very true.
You're welcome.
Shout out to anybody else who's watched The Vampire Diaries or has a special relationship with vampires who's listening to this. I want to hear from the vampire girlies. Send us a message at entering Storybrooke at Storybrooke Pod on Instagram and tell us your relationship with vampires and what vampires mean to you.
I hope you're
what
healing.
What are you looking at, Carter? Yeah.
Just make sure we haven't missed anything.
I think it's good. What is your character that you dislike, Carter?
I feel like the answer based on what actually mattered in the episode should be Rumple as somebody who literally orchestrated Regina's great trauma for personal convenience. And I think that there is a level on which that is true, but in terms of like personal visceral reactions, it is going to be David because he's just so irritating. And yeah, I don't think I can justify it. I think like intellectually, I do feel like Rumple is really showing like the depths of evil in like an important and fascinating way here. And David is just showing me the irritating people that are in life everywhere, all the time, always and forever. And, you know, that's the kind of evil that I see more every day. And therefore, that is what is irritating them is right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with August. He wasn't in this episode, but Tawny reminded me about him. And
he fucking sucks.
And I hate him. All right, last thing to do, we need to pick out a love-hate fan-tie moment. So something that you really enjoyed and also really despised or maybe just have very complicated feelings about. I'm going to go with Rumpelstiltskin showing back up at the end of the episode and it being revealed that he was the one who orchestrated the whole Victor Frankenstein.
Oh, that's mine too.
situation. Because on one hand, obviously, I love it when Rumple is the puppeteer, the puppet master pulling all the strings. I love his long-term planning. It also bothers me, though, as somebody who respects Regina as a human being and sees her as a person. Shout out to Sarah Rule, Becky, Nurse of Salem, just saw that play this weekend at LCT at Lincoln Center Theater. I do imagine her to be real. That's a line from the play when Becky is giving her own testimony at the end of the play. She says to the judge, I only ask that you imagine me to be real. Rumple does not imagine Regina, let alone anybody, to be real, not even his own son. And it's hard to see that. It's hard to see him damage the life of somebody I care about.
Yeah, I think that scene is... It's difficult because I think it like is in a lot of ways a really good illustration of such a common occurrence of people like maybe it, like I worry sometimes that it, like it's like maybe too cartoonish for people to feel like yes this is like a dramatization of something that is very common that is just like people with power deciding very arbitrarily to make people's lives worse and in particular to like exploit facts of gender and sexuality in young like in young women and gender minority individuals for you know stupid selfish reasons that are like not even that deep and that they don't take that seriously and like they don't see as questions of import or even like nefariousness. Like they're having this conversation like they might as well be in like a little seminar room or you know the office kitchen or something. They're so casual and like detached and intellectual about this thing that they just did that is someone's defining trauma.
Yes, I think that's
very effective writing because that happens all the time and it's a thing that is like
it's
useful
terrifying.
But also, like, I do feel like there are, like, weird things about it. Like, the fact they're having this conversation about magic and science that I'm like Edward Woodward Kitsis and Adam Corwitz because I, too, am going to keep having the exact same two non-thoughts about this and giving them over and over again, which is that they've not highlighted anything of interest to us. And it, like, I think, like, cuts into the moment in a weird way where it's, like, also, like, this moment that is, like, about these beautiful shots of these terrible people doing a terrible thing together is also like full of this other layer of something that I don't care about and that sort of like cuts in and out of it.
We need Tani's moment.
Okay, I think you should edit mine to go before yours because it's very short and not as important. But I think that I really loved the initial reveal of Whale as the doctor. Like, just the, like, when he turned around and was looking really cool in his jacket. But I was very...
And the Wizard of Oz glasses.
That's the thing, is, like, in the... When he says... When the Mad Hatter talks about the wizard in the scene, when I first saw this show, like, last year, and then I know last year, and then again today rewatching the episode. Both times I was like, "Am I about to meet the Wizard of Oz?" And they turned around, and he looks kind of like the Wizard of Oz, but then he's not the Wizard of Oz.
That was a really popular fan theory.
That's a really confusing.
And they literally say, "Are you the wizard?" And he says, "I prefer doctor."
I know. I was like, and they're like, "No, if he can't do it, no one else can." I'm like, sounds like the Wizard of Oz to me.
I'm a sentimental man who always longed to be a father. That was not the melody. I'm sorry. It's been a while. Sorry, Stephen Schwartz.
Don't apologize to Stephen Schwartz.
But yeah, I find
his
that
ass
language
is not
confusing.
Listening.
Schwartz should apologize to me.
Stephen Schwartz should apologize to you and to all of us. We were there for fucking Pocahontas, Stephen Schwartz.
Okay.
That's going to be edited out, I assume.
No, we should leave it in. Well.
I'm saying it. I'm saying Stephen Schwartz should apologize for Pocahontas. Me, I'm not in the industry. Hi.
Should we read Darian's final thoughts now to close us out?
Darian's final thoughts. Victor Frankenstein has not completed formal training to call himself a doctor. He's not gone to med school, and he has not completed an apprenticeship.
Darian also said she wrote something about Rumpel. Wait, I'm going to find it. I swear to God, she wrote something about Rumpelstiltskin. Did she not?
Oh, the 4D chess thing?
Yes. Where was that?
I can read that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's read this from Darian for a final thought. Rumpel is playing 4D chess while everybody else is playing checkers. His plan to manipulate Regina is fucking evil, but so impressive and effective. These three men deserve the misery they endure in the future. Thank you for that, Darian.
Period.
And thank you all for joining us.
As always, if you want to support Entering Storybrooke, you can do so by heading over to at Instagram at StorybrookePod, which is also the same on Twitter. And of course, let your friends know about Entering Storybrooke so we can get more people to tune in, because we're going to be doing this for a long while, so be sure to stay tuned.
Remember that you probably shouldn't drop out of med school, because then you might get trapped in a land without magic.